This edition of The Stack was first broadcast from Zurich on Saturday, the 23rd of March 2013, on Monocle 24.
Title from the heart of Bern, an editor from a much-respected Swiss design journal, and a report on a unique Greek take on the world. Muffle your cuckoo clock for edition 30 of The Stack. Today, we're in Zurich. Also ahead of the program, we'll be hearing about and from Reportagen. Fancy bit of high heels am Hindu Kush?
Das Buch handelt von einem Fotografen und einem Journalisten, die von einem Magazin Geld bekommen, um sich quer durch Asien zu vögeln.
And Urs Honegger, online editor of the architecture and design magazine Hochparterre, will tell us about his typical reader.
The architect, male, 45, 50 years old, has his own enterprise.
And we'll find out why South is the new center of gravity when we hear from the creator of a new title from Greece.
South Europe is in a bigger problem than other places. So we see things upside down from a southern perspective.
All that and a few triangles of Toblerone today on edition 30 of The Stack here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to the living room of Monocle's Zurich base. I'm Tyler Brulé. The last week's been one lived on the rails, and there are few places better to stock up for a jaunt down to Geneva than Zurich's Hauptbahnhof. This week, I sampled the new edition of German Architectural Digest, a bit underwhelming, Dominic Wickmann's new Stern, more on this in a moment, and a very enjoyable edition of Switzerland's Bilanz business magazine. Yes, dear listener, just as Germany's newsstands are bursting with new things to read, so too is Switzerland's. But is it all happy and healthy? In a moment, we'll find out when we meet our two guests joining us around the table for a bit of café and Kuchen. Well, joining us in our cozy front sitting room around our coffee table today are two gentlemen. One voice familiar, certainly been heard when we've been doing live broadcasts from Zurich before. Also someone, I guess I would say instrumental, probably one of our favorite magazines out of Switzerland, which of course is Hochparterre, Urs Honegger. You couldn't have more, really, a much more Swiss name, working for more of a Swiss magazine. Urs, welcome. For those of you who, and people who are not familiar with Hochparterre, maybe just tell us, where does the magazine sit within the architecture and design landscape of Switzerland?
Hopefully right in the middle, but we're trying not to be too specialized. We try to make kind of a balancing act between writing for the professionals, like people who work in architecture and design. These are our main topics, so that they say, okay, they know what they're writing about. And on the other hand, we're writing for like interested laymen as well, that they say, oh, that's interesting, I understood what they're writing about.
Also joining us around the table today, someone who trekked down from Bern, of course, the center of power of this country, the people in Geneva, Basel, and Zurich, and many other places, this being Switzerland, might have other things to say about that, is Claude Fankhauser. And I would say, probably as a runner-up to Honegger, Fankhauser is probably not a bad Swiss last name as well. But for those who were listening to the program last week, we were, of course, touched on when we were at Do You Read Me, Reportagen magazine came up. It is certainly one of my favorite titles just in terms of format. I think you've done something really amazing with this magazine. Again, for those who maybe didn't hear last week's show and people are sort of celebrating what you've done, what's the idea behind Reportagen?
Well, Reportagen is like a hybrid. It's happening between the tension between literature and journalism with a clear focus on journalism. We are thriving to tell stories. We are storytellers and we focus on true stories. So for us, the narrative element is much, much most important.
And in mentioning the narrative element and having this line, because I think what's interesting when you look at it as well, it's not just content, but also the form of the title. Before we went on air, I was asking you what your production lead times were like, and you said you're in the midst of it. And part of it is you've created something which is well and truly bookish. You have this this linen cover on something which is a magazine, which costs 15 euros, 20 Swiss francs. So, you know, it's, I think for what you get, it's not crazily priced. So was this also a big consideration too, when you talked about this hybrid approach, what the tactile quality also had to be as much as, you know, the ink on the page?
From the beginning on, we thought that the stories, they deserve a brilliant wrapping. We wanted to make clear that we not only want to sell stories, but we want to give a sensual feeling about the stories. Mm. We want people to take the magazine in their hands and say, wow, and say, what's that? And want to start reading, because if you have it in your hands, you don't want to give it out again. So it really stays in your hand. And that's exactly what we want to achieve. So we want to make sure that our passion for good told stories transposes through the product itself.
Mm. What gap did you see in the market? And do you see yourself as a title which is really focusing on Switzerland? Of course, you know, we were in Berlin last week, and I mean, I've seen it in many other places in the German-speaking market. I mean, do you see yourself first serving a Swiss reader, or do you want to be you know, really embracing the wider German-speaking world?
Well, the problem is that we are a German-speaking magazine, so the market is limited anyway. So, but still we try to embrace the whole world, and our selection of stories always covers the whole world. So if you see on the second page, I think, instead of a table of content, we have a world map where every...
We have that too in our magazine.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that. Where every point marks one specific story that is happening in the magazine or overall on the bottom down.
I guess what I was getting at, though, is when someone picks this up, and of course on this program, I really want to go over the essential elements of maybe what is publishing in this country versus Austria versus Germany. Do you want someone to go to the newsstand in Hamburg or in Vienna, for that matter, and feel that they're picking up something which is Swiss? Do you want them to sort of know the provenance of this? Or should it just feel like a very well-edited German magazine?
No, really, we are Swiss, and we are small, we are beautiful, and that's exactly what we want to transpose with our product. We are not the big shots in Hamburg sitting in a huge tower and having a team of editors of 300-500 people. No, we are really small. We are living in a smallish office in Bern, and really we do all by ourselves. We are really the craftsmen who do this. And this is what we want to transpose. We are doing handicraft, actually.
Right. Typically Bernese.
Yes, absolutely.
It sounds like. Urs, tell me right now, on some side, and it was fascinating, you know, being in Germany last week, and on one side, because, you know, a lot of what we talk about on the program is really the state of where media is right now, and I mean particularly print media, and that's obviously that's what this program tries to delve into every week. Though of course we tend to go off in extraordinary tangents as well. But Germany, I think from an English language perspective, really seems like it's in quite rude health. You go to newsstands. Magazines are bountiful. Last week, you know, Robert Clanton was talking about, you know, that you know, e-readership when it comes to books is only around 3%, etc. I mean, Switzerland, of course, has always wanted to define itself in a different way. It's really, again, one of the brand pillars of this country. How does the state of magazines and the state of newspapers, how does it feel to you right now in this country?
We have the same problems that everyone in Europe has, I think. They're a bit slower here. They came a bit later, which is always the case in Switzerland. We get the same influences, but they arrive a bit later.
The mountains, that's the problem, right?
Maybe, and it's an advantage in this case.
Yeah.
In many cases, it has been and it is. Like newspapers, they have a very hard time. They had very healthy times, very good times, and now they have to accommodate to other conditions in the market. Mm. I think they lost about 30% of the advertorial income and stuff like that. With magazines, I think it's a bit better. When I see Reportagen or other titles we have here that were founded like within the last few years, you have to say, okay, there's a market. You don't have this news problem that the internet, the digital media take away the market because they're faster than a magazine and a newspaper. So the situation is probably a bit better. For Hochparterre, the situation is good. We're working hard, but we have an audience and we have a readership And we have different fields where we can make an income. So if we lose a little on the ad side, we can make that up with other sections of the business.
I want to talk about that a little bit later. Maybe we should also say, I said you're from the magazine, but you're from the digital side of the title as well. You know, maybe tell me, and you know, I know we were laughing about things coming a little bit slower to Switzerland, but like Germany, this country, it does take a more considered approach. On one side, the Swiss want to be very decisive when they do things, maybe hence the culture of referendums and everything else that of course stems from here. You know, both politically and socially. But there is that side of, even though there's a lot of money here and it is one of the wealthiest countries in the world, there's not that swiftness to necessarily embrace and adopt. Do you think that is it a slight suspicion on the part of consumers, even when it comes to media as well, that people maybe take a little bit longer to really not just embrace something, but give it a big old hug?
That's a difficult question, actually. I don't know. I really don't know. I couldn't say that we experienced that. In terms of launching our title, we felt embraced from the connoisseurs from the very first moment on.
Because print is tried and tested no matter what the brand is, but it is, I think, maybe more the issues of technology, etc. And maybe, you know, what has happened with newspapers here, that it seemed for a while that, let's say, the likes of the Neue Zürcher Zeitung was having a good ride. I don't think the ride is maybe quite as nice as it was 3 or 4 years ago, and things are shifting. But do you feel that the market is really in flux and doing a bit of soul searching here as well?
Well, I think the main problem is that you don't really have a choice here anymore. So you have three big newspapers.
In GM, you mean German language?
That's right, yeah. And that's it. And like 10 years ago, it was like, what was it, 20, 30 or something like that. So, and that's the question of content. I mean, in Bern, you have the Bund, the biggest newspaper. But that's partially owned by Tagesanzeiger, meanwhile. So it's produced in Zurich, and in Bern you only get the local part. So it's a little bit pointless to differentiate content because you don't have choice of the content.
And that was that really part of the reaction element of Reportagen as well?
That was one reason for Reportagen, certainly. Yeah. The second biggest reason was that you think there is no place anymore for long features, for long narrative written features. And our stories are mainly between 25,000 and 40,000 characters, which is very, very long.
Which is always strange to me.
That's right, yes.
I mean, I guess if I'm just looking, these are probably stories which are about, English translation around 3,000, 4,000 words maybe.
Yeah, that maybe even a little bit more, I think.
And by English standards, that's actually already long. But by focusing and having, you know, as you said, let's say shorter by German language standards, was this a position of modernity? Was it just a gut instinct that maybe people didn't want to go to the lengths of when you get the grand story in Die Zeit, which takes you the whole weekend to get through?
I tell you what, it was not a marketing decision. It was just Daniel Puntes and me who founded this company. We are just huge fans of written narrative texts. And we thought that there must be other people that like that as well. And so we started it. And it turned out there are actually a lot of people that like to read long, long, long texts. Mm.
Well, it's always good to come back to business models, which we will do in a moment. And you, of course, were talking about all of those people occupying big buildings in Hamburg, which you gave us a perfect entree, of course, to talk about Dominik Wickman's potentially new and improved Stern, which hit newsstands in this part of the world last week. But we will dive into that after this short break. You're listening to The Staff on Monocle 24. We're back in a moment.
At 1800 hours London time, tune into Midori House, the hour-long show that lifts the lid on the daily workings at Monocle's HQ. We delve deeper into the stories of the latest issue of Monocle and catch up with our editors and correspondents on the road as they put together the next one. Tune in at 1800 hours London time and finish the working day with Midori House, live every weekday.
Now, some would call it a folly to start a cross-cultural magazine in Greece in this climate. For Greek curator and art world mover Encheka Marina Foukidis, though, it was a necessity. The second issue of South, as a state of mind, just hit newsstands in specialty stores and museum shops around the world. Foukidis and a group of Athenian editors launched South as an effort to show cultural theory from their own southern point of view. And the first issue sold out within a week. The second issue, whose theme is Arcadia and some of whose content was produced in a creative summit that took place on the island of Anafi last August, is just as good as the first. Just after a South launch party in Berlin, our correspondent there, Kimberly Bradley, sat down with Foukidis to find out more.
The whole title, the full title, and this is the idea, is South as a State of Mind. We were caught in the Greek situation, which right now it's a very difficult situation in Europe. And we thought, okay, South Europe is in a bigger problem than other places. So we immediately wanted a way out without immigrating from there. And also a solution, which is very difficult to find. And we thought, okay, let's shift the map and see things upside down from a southern perspective. You know, because usually it's the West and the Western thought and the North that it's always. So we thought, okay, South is not anymore a geographical, only a geographical topography, but also a state of mind. And we took all them stereotypes about South or how other people see the South, Europe or South in general, like more lazy or people that shout a lot, they like to have vacation, they're tricksters. This became the context. So, for example, to make it very simple, when we present an artist, and the first artist we presented in the first issue was Mauricio Catalan, it's under the rubric trickster, and this is the artist of every issue. Or we have our politics column, it's called South. Or we have a column on tradition, which is also very important for Southern stereotypical context. And there we put all the things that happen in the South or Southern artists that somehow we draw our tradition from. For example, in the second issue, we have the MoMAs by Martin Kippenberg, which is the Museum of Contemporary Art in Syros Island. So this is the idea of South.
Is South meant to be mostly an art magazine or is it a culture magazine?
Of course, all of us, the team, comes from the arts, from the visual arts. But I thought, and we all thought, that we don't want a magazine primarily read about collectors, buyers, and art gallerists, and everybody to see what they're going to buy next. We wanted something fresh and new that doesn't feed any market on verticomas. I don't mean market money, that doesn't feed consumer market, you know. We really wanted, and so that's what we are trying to do. I mean, we start from arts, visual arts, as a vehicle, as an excuse, not a bad excuse, a good excuse, but we're trying to somehow include other kind of culture and also get an audience much broader than the art audience.
What was it like starting a magazine in Greece? Did you have a budget? Did you have sponsors? How do you finance this publication?
It was like jumping from Tour Eiffel or, you know, like a high building, because you don't start right now in Greece, nothing. We have no money, really. You know, we have nothing to lose. We are a team of five. We're going to put all our energy. And the only startup sort of sponsoring we had was this publishing house that in the beginning they offer us a space for office and they offer us also the printing. For not so many copies. So this is how we started. We don't pay ourselves. We thought, to be honest with you, I thought that when we did the first issue that it would be, this is it, you know, that this is it. It would be like just a crazy idea that will end up there. And then the magazine sold so fast. We had about 2,000 copies. It was sold out in a week. It was such a big success considering what we were doing. So we thought, no, that has to be going on. Now we changed publishers because we had to find a bigger publisher that can print many, many more copies for us. And that's what we do. We still don't pay ourselves. And it's a lot of work, I'm telling you. But we think now, and with the support of the readers and their friends, that we're going to make some economy for ourselves as well. But one thing is certain, we're continuing.
Is it biannual or is it bimonthly? How often does it appear?
It's biannually for the moment, but it's not a magazine that it is designed to be biannually. It's designed actually to be 3 or 4 times per year, and this is our next aim. Now we have the next issue that we keep having this 6 months break or work break. And the next issue is, the theme is North Goes South, whatever this means, two meanings. And then our aim is to make it 3 times a year and then 4 times a year.
Could you talk a little bit about the content? The second issue, which just came out, which you just launched in Berlin, has the theme of Arcadia. The first one, as far as I remember, was just simply introducing the concept of South.
As you said very rightly, that the first issue was South as a state of mind, because we wanted to So what we did is we did a mix-up of collecting articles that was already written. I mean, we found the writers, of course, written about the subject here and there, or that we thought maybe not, they were not so obvious about the subject, but we thought it would be good to be in an anthology like that. And actually, I'm very fond of magazines and publications that contain inside articles that they were not bright fresh. I like this mix. And then we commission writers as well. So, for example, in the first issue, we have Massimiliano Gioni, which is now the director of Venice Biennial. And it's a big support, and he sent us a visual and a proposal, and this, his pages became something like an artwork. We had Massimiliano Gioni, we had Nikos Papasteriadis writing on South. He's a sociologist, Australian and art sociologist. We had Octavio Zaya, which now will be also the curator of the Spanish Pavilion, writing about South that he knows so well. We had Chus Martinez writing again about South. So somehow, if you really want to read through the lines, most of the people were coming of hypothetical or like literal South. So they had another way of explaining exactly what this, or Ricardo Nicolau wrote, the deputy director of Seralves, a beautiful piece on the fight between North and South. Then for the second issue, we started from the thing that everybody says, oh, in the South they just go on vacation. And or many times my German friends or my English friends or my American friends, they would say, what? You're taking a month of vacation? I was trying always to explain that it's not like that. I'm not exactly on vacation. It's the way you live outdoors in a place that it's very hot. You know, you just change locations, but nobody really believed that. So we thought, okay, let's make it obvious. Started with the tradition of Arcadia, which is an ancient Greek concept that means utopia, transcendental utopia in the nature. And we thought, okay, let's try to contextualize our vacation. Invited friends, artists from all over and writers. Annika Larsson, for example, the Swedish artist that lives in Berlin, came and shot a film, and the first cut was shown in the magazine. And we did a sort of archaic or whatever residence. Very transcendental. It was Dionysiac in a way. And that's our tradition. And it became a very good content, I think, and very interesting content of the magazine, together with other people like Jürgen Teller, that spends his summers in Greece, but also have a love affair with Greece, in the sense like what people get when they get into this Arcadic and Dionysiac climate, that sent us his work, new work made for South from Hydra Island, or Augustin Pere Rubio that sent us his letter from Lefkada Island. Many curators and artists from all over the world have a love affair with Greece. It's not a coincidence.
And that was our Berlin correspondent, Kimberly Bradley, speaking to Marina Fokidis, founder of South as a State of Mind. Now, before I went to the break, I was just talking about Stern magazine, which relaunched last week. You were referencing those big companies in Hamburg. Gentlemen, I would like you to peel back the cover and maybe tell me what you make of the title. And maybe first, Urs, are you a reader? I mean, what is your sort of your German sort of newsweekly diet look like? Is there one? No, and does it include Stern?
It does not, because there isn't. I really do actually only the online version of German magazines. Spiegel Online is one of my daily. I look at it several times just to know what's going on.
So you would treat Der Spiegel Online as your almost your default news source, you would say?
Default would probably be there's Tagesanzeiger.ch, there's Blick.ch
for your tabloid news here.
Exactly. I haven't much of no pain to go towards these media too. And there's Spiegel Online, yeah, that's probably the ones I look after. And Hochparterre.ch,
of course,
as well. If you want to know what's going on in Switzerland in architecture and design, you have to go there. So I don't read the Stern on paper normally. And
do you look at any of the, I mean, you talk about looking at these print brands, certainly online, but would you also pick up, let's say, you go to Der Spiegel's website, do you look at Der Spiegel then in print as well? Would you pick it up?
I would. I did last time when I wanted to know how they do the connection between online and print, because these are thoughts.
So you're looking at it from a professional capacity.
I did. But I can't remember when I looked at it last time, really reading it for like entertainment or information. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I read books. When I read books. Maybe I would read Reportagen rather than the Stern.
Interesting. Okay, so give me the magazine because you're not going to be a very good critic of it.
I'm sorry.
You clearly want to have a whine about this. You've got something against people occupying big buildings with too many editors in Hamburg.
Well. No, it's totally fair enough. And I tell you what, I read the Stern. It's brilliant bathroom lecture. And really, if you want to know what's happening and what's going on in Germany, Stern is a brilliant lecture. I really like that.
It's interesting because, you know, there's been sort of a week of settle down for people. You know, they've looked at it and many have said, well, you know, the art directors and editor Dominik Wickman, they didn't change a lot. Some have said they've really gone back to maybe a bit of a Stern feeling of the 1970s and have tried to bring back, both from a design point of view, but even maybe from a content perspective as well, a slightly different feeling and mood to the title. And I'm wondering if that's how it feels to you. And is that how, because if I look at also sort of, you know, oddly, you know, Reportagen is, you know, it's very fresh looking when I look at your magazine, but there is something also comfortable and familiar about it too. And that has to do with, as we're saying, maybe the linen cover, typographically it is modern, but yet it has that sort of familiarity. Have I seen it before? And if I haven't seen it before, it's a title which welcomes me in, and I think that's what Stern seems to be trying to do again.
It's funny. It's exactly what I thought as well. When I first saw the new Stern, I was really thinking, oh, they're going back to the roots. And this is really, really interesting. And you're totally right. Reportagen wants to give you the feeling of coziness. We want to give you the feeling of laid back. And as I said before, we are not breaking news. We are the opposite of breaking news.
Yeah,
we are sit down, take a cup of tea, relax, and read a good story.
Tell me though, just before we move on, what is your weekly diet look like in terms of print? Where are you going for break? Well, and breaking news. I mean, obviously, in a digital or electronic environment as well. What would you say are your key sources?
Key sources are real papery newspapers. That's really my thing. So I'm a really analog guy. You couldn't guess from the product, of course.
No, not at all. No, I can tell you hate paper.
And so really newspapers like the Bund, which is mainly Tagesanzeiger, is my main source of news, so to say. And also I discovered not long ago a website called infosperber.ch, which brings investigative journalism really to the point in the digital world, I think.
And that is a site I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
How is it funded? Is it a...
As far as I know, it's funded by donations and by a Stiftung. What's that? Foundation?
Yeah, foundation.
Yeah, right.
A little bit earlier, you talked about how you go about funding, and I want to maybe just if we go away for just a very brief break, I think just for both of you, because also what's interesting about Reportage, which we didn't touch on, yeah, again, I think it's very good value, the cover price that's on offer, twenty Swiss francs, but what's interesting about it is that it's I don't see any advertising in it.
There is.
Well, then it's very hidden then.
And no, very, no, it's not hidden.
It's very, very, very. But anyway, I want to come back and talk about funding models in a moment. You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24. We are in Zurich. We're at our headquarters. We're back in a moment. And you're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24. A very special edition of the program. We're coming to you from Zurich today, where I'm joined by Claude Fankhauser from Reportagen magazine and also Urs Honegger of Hochparterre. Gentlemen, just before we went to the break, I wanted to talk a little bit about funding models. And Claude, clipped me around the ears because I said that the advertising was invisible in his magazine. I will correct that. It's subtle. which it is, and I think that this is something which readers really appreciate, and it's but you haven't gone down the road of also, and it is a tricky balance. I mean, you talk about doing a magazine,
that's right.
you want it to feel literary, and you want people to jump in because they know they're not going to get the visual feast that also advertising is, but it is present subtly. When you set out to do this, is it a commercial exercise for you, or are you sort of manning three other jobs as well to make this happen, or is this your life's commitment?
Yeah, definitely it is our life's commitment, and we always had the reader in mind when we produced the magazine. We don't have to have the
advertisers. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, and that's the reason why we have 120 pages where. You aren't disrupted by advertisement as a reader. You just get 120 pages of content. Mm. And that was exactly what we wanted to have in the beginning. Mm. And it's also clear that that's not mainly the advertisers finance our project, but the subscribers. So it is really a product from fans to fans, with a commercial intention behind it, of course.
Now, whenever anyone uses the word fans today, then people immediately think about building social networks to build a project and to really, drive audience share. You've now fully disclosed to all listeners that you're very much a paper guy. Mm. So when you talk about that, and is it truly sort of word of mouth that you think this is spreading, or do you all maintain, and is a social media component important to what you do to get people to the print?
I think it will be more important the longer we are. So I think in 2 or 3 years, the internet community will be very, very, very important for us. But right now...
I love how you talk in terms of years and the internet, which is...
Yeah.
Very charming.
I lost it. Sorry.
I think it is interesting to hear that, though, because it's, I think other people talk about, they want to do something in terms of days and hours when it comes to the web. Yeah. And but you're taking this much more considered approach.
No, what I wanted to say, sorry, was that I told Urs before that our product, you really can't explain it. It's really difficult to explain it, but people have to have it in their hands. Mm. So if somebody has it in their hands, they understand it intuitively. And this is exactly what it is about. So you can't, such an essential product, you cannot promote it over the web. It just doesn't work, right? So you have to have it in your hands. And so mouth-to-mouth propaganda is what works best for us.
So when you launched 9 issues ago...
Yeah.
How did you hit newsstand? What did you do for awareness? Was it just a case of convincing people at kiosk across Switzerland that they had to stalk you? What was it? Was it a series of events? Was it reputation and PR? I mean, how did you get this into people's hands in the beginning?
Right, we didn't have a reputation in the beginning, so that really fails.
There was no big media story in the NZZ or the Tagesanzeiger.
No. We had a little coverage in the media, which we were very, very thankful for, of course, and that brought us a little bit. But I think really we started with our friend circle. We gave everybody 10 issues of our magazine, said, please distribute it, give it away, give it to your friends, and this is how it all rolled. And the whole newspaper thing, this is, of course, we paid for the presence in the beginning. That's for sure, yeah. But nowadays, they are very happy of reportagen. Mm. And they really sell it also.
Well, which is, yeah. And, you know, people who...
No, I mean, you're laughing, but for me, it's still amazing after 1.5 years when I go to a newspaper stand and see my magazine there. It's really... Wow. People really want it.
Listen, hey, I don't feel any different. Yeah. You know, I'm always the one at airports, you know, yeah, still restacking and merchandising and making sure I put other people's magazines behind mine. I think there's sort of a full-time business in doing that. Urs, tell me the tension and you know, maybe friction that might exist and the lines that you have between what you do digitally and then also on paper. It's because even though format-wise, I mean, it's very different than what you're doing from reportage, but, you know, you're on this wonderful tactile stock. You have a format which peaks above other magazines. You're that little bit taller, so it's actually, it's always quite easy to find on the newsstand. But you being on the online side of the title, do you feel that you're integrated as part of, you said you had an editorial team of around 10 people. Are you very much part of what happens with the print metabolism, or are you doing your own thing?
No, I'm taking part. I'm quite happy with my position there.
I'm sure your editors would be thrilled to hear that. That's good.
I'm actually quite thankful because they write a good part of the stuff that we're publishing online. I don't do that on my own, or with the other two editors who are partly in the online section too. So this is actually where we get the content from that everybody is publishing on the web. Meanwhile, for the print magazine, we on the online section on the website, we just do daily news, like up to six posts a day.
And what would pass as daily news in the world of Swiss architecture and design? Is this commissions being won for new projects? What is the news diet look like?
A strong section is about architectural competition, like who has won, where is the competition taking place, what does the project look like. We try to provide people with the plans, not only the renderings, the plans as well from the project. This is something that differentiates us from other publications online as well. There's of course just like new products on the design section. There's many political news as well when it comes to planning, when it comes to what's happening, for example, with the Kaserne in Zurich, which is an actual like an up-to-date theme topic at the moment. We do a Presseschau every day. I don't know the word
in English. A press review.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. These are like normal posts we do. Mm. We do have on the website a section as well, which is only for subscribers, whether it's print subscribers or the subscribers for only online. And there we have more comments from the editors, like longer stuff as well. We have some articles from the print issue. So this is more or less the content we have on the website.
And a little bit earlier, Urs, you were talking about also, let's say if there's a slower month for advertising, of course, which every magazine has, that there are other areas for revenue in the business. So what are sort of the principal drivers when one looks at the profit and loss sheet? Is it events? What else drives the Hochbauter brand in terms of revenue?
It's actually a third of the income comes from the subscribers, a third comes from the advertising section, and a third comes from special issues we do in collaboration with partners. It's a bit shifting now from the advertising section towards the event section. We do much more events. We have a lot of advertisers or partners who want to do an event with us. Mm-hmm. Which is very interesting for us because we can influence stuff. We can go out there and meet people and talk to people and listen to what they have to say. On the other hand, it's hard work to do events. But this is probably the situation where we do our business, our money.
Yeah, but it's not so hard to go and have a glass of wine with your readers and things like that, right?
No, but to make them accommodate in an atmosphere where they want to drink a glass of wine.
Yes, that is the challenge. Claude, tell me when you look out and you talked about maybe the role that this title might have, in 3 years' time, online, etc. It was also part of your thinking as well, long form, because we know that long form is something which just simply does not work online. I mean, people can sustain themselves. You can read 400 or 500 words, but as much as I might like what the New York Times does online, etc., there gets a point you can't go and click through to another screen. Do you perhaps have a sense of invincibility? You think that this is all something which maybe protects you in this environment as well, when everyone is saying digital, 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 that you think, well, regardless, because you're doing stories which are 9,000 strokes, as you said, you're somewhat protected.
Yes, I think so, definitely. This is really our niche. And like I said, it's really for connoisseurs. It's really for people who like print. I wouldn't say we will never go digital, certainly not. And actually, there are plans to go digital. But you mentioned the key problems quite perfectly, I think. I doubt that our format is 100% compatible with what the internet reader expects.
Mm. I'm going to set you both a challenge before we go to break. I want you to think, while we're away for a commercial, you're going to paint the Hochparterre and Reportagen reader for me. So I want you to think about that. And when we come back, you're going to get your audio pencils out, and you're going to tell us what these people look like, or when you go to your cocktail parties and drink nice Schweizer Weisswein with them. You're listening to The Stack. We're in Zurich today, and we'll be back in a moment. You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24. We're coming to you today from our offices in the heart of Zurich, and we're talking to Claude Fankhauser. He is one of the founders of Reportagen magazine, and Urs Honegger from the online side of Hochparterre. Gentlemen, I set you a task before we went away to the break. Urs, and you set yourself up as well, because you said you go to all these cocktail parties to meet your readers. Who is the Hochparterre reader? When you think about editing your pages online, but also when you go out and meet your audience, is it a hardcore of Swiss architects, all with mustaches and sensible shoes, or is it is it all aspiring architecture students? Would you say there's sort of a core that you think about?
Probably the core is the architect, male, 45, 50 years old, has his own enterprise with, let's say, 3 people, 5 people, 6 people, wears a suit but not a tie. That's probably the core of our readership. But there is much more on the side to that core, of course. I myself, for the digital part, I hope that we have a bit a younger audience. I can't really say, we can't do research, or we didn't do research on that. But this is probably I think for the magazine, it's 70% architects who read us.
Mm. You said you don't do research, and Claude, you were saying the same thing. I mean, you didn't really research when you thought about sort of the length of these stories. To both of you, how do you feel about that? Because a lot of publishers love spreadsheets, and they love to see data, and they spend probably too much money trying to figure out the specific tastes of their audiences, etc. Would you rather sort of have this somewhat vague 45 to 50 year old person in mind, rather than maybe scientifically knowing that yes, there are now this many 21 year old potential students, and this is really how you're going to drive traffic, Urs, and you need to focus on this audience or not?
It's not actually a choice. We don't have the money to do research, and we don't want to spend the money. One thing that my boss quite fiercely hates, it's people with suitcases who counsel or like consultants who try to explain how the business works. And on the other hand,
he's a man after every editor's heart, I would say. So.
On the other hand, we probably don't see a person when we write, but what is a strong point is the thing that interests us interests our reader as well, which is a bit bold to say, maybe a bit arrogant, but this is the way it works, because in the end we feel that if it interests us, if we have a passion for what we write about, then the outcome is good, and then you probably find a reader as well. Mm-hmm. It worked until now. I have no Excel sheets to prove it.
But, no, we don't want to. We don't need proof. We don't need to see them either.
Right.
No one needs any more.
We
Excel,
still exist.
Excel
that's
sheets
probably the proof.
Yes. Okay. Glad you've had extra time. Yeah. The reportage and reader. Is there someone in mind, or now that you've met your fans, would you say that there is also a real heartland when you think of them?
It's a huge variety amongst our readers. That's for sure. Also, when you see our subscribers list, it's really huge. Between, I don't know, 20 to 80 male, female, urban, rural, no matter what. So the only thing we can say for certain is it's people that actually love to read, period. And that's the only thing we know, actually, about our readers. And I totally agree with Urs. We rather spend our money in excellent stories than in research.
Yeah,
that's totally right. And I think also the duty of a publisher is not to know its readers, but to make goddamn good stories.
Mm. On that note, I'm going to ask you to reach down to your right. You've brought some titles in, Claude. What do you want to? What title do you want to talk about first? There's you've kind of got them in sort of a mixed order, but
yes, I'm wondering. I have a big stack. Maybe first I want to introduce you to that one, Quotum.
Quotum, which I saw in Pro Quadratmeter in Berlin last week. Swiss, isn't it, as well?
It's Swiss, of course. And I think really I discovered it like 1 or 2 weeks ago, and I really, really like it. I think that they really do a lot of things right. I like the layout. It's not nervous. It's really calm. It's really laid back. I think it comes out every half year, so twice a year. The only critique I have there is that I don't like the format, so it's not nice to take it with you to the beach or to the train or something like that. It's very heavy, but still, I think it's really, really well done.
I'm just going to reach across the table. I'm looking at the... Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's the exact same size as Hawk Quarter. So therefore, you're saying is you don't like the size of Urs's magazine, but then he's on the digital side of it.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, also, yes, it's a very thick magazine.
Yeah.
What do you like about it? Is it the sense of sort of quality? Do you like the fact that this is also fellow Swiss publishers who are putting out something interesting? What appeals you look at it?
That is the point. I really think it's really well done. I think the typo is beautiful. I think the layout is beautiful.
The reproduction is fantastic.
Absolutely. The photos are excellent. And if I wouldn't do reportage, I would do something like that maybe. Oh, maybe so. A little bit too much photos for my case, but well.
There's probably still lots of time, Claude. Urs, what do you make of it? Had you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
And first impressions?
Beautiful. I like the format. Good size.
Oh, God.
But but it's got the thickness of a year's worth of Hochparterres.
Right.
Which is not an insult
at all.
Maybe half
a year's. Yeah, but I'm a book guy actually. I studied German literature, so I'm not all digital. So I can handle a bit of thickness within a product.
This is good to hear. There is something vaguely, and it's even though it's a modern font, and when you mentioned German literature,
of course,
it does have slightly fascistic shades to it because they've come up with so you've got this Quotum with this quite stark Gothic-ish. The modernized font, and then this red cover. It is evocative of late 1930s Germany as well. But nevertheless, as you say, there is sort of a discipline, and it's anyway. I think I give it a. I picked it out of the newsstand as well. I thought it was great when I saw it. Okay, Urs, your turn.
I go for 2,7 magazine. It's translated, it's 2.7 magazine. It's from Luzern. It's about the clubbing scene in and around Luzern. I didn't know it myself. My colleague Lilia Glanzmann showed it to me. I liked the topic. I like clubbing.
You're
I like music.
Okay.
I was more of, but still music is great. And I like that it's local. I think it's quite confident and attractive that people from Luzern, which is an important city in Switzerland, but still a small one, say, okay, we do have stories we want to tell about what's going on clubbing-wise in Luzern.
I think you've described it very well, but you undersell it. I mean, it's this incredible little, book. It really moves quite far away from what you would expect of the clubbing scene, where you expect it's going to be some type of zine, and just that, and or it's some kind of free sheet. But this is, a really properly beautiful publication, quite remarkable. Maybe we have time for two more very quickly before we go. Claude, one more magazine. Urs, we'll come to you very quickly before we have to wrap here.
Another one is called Entwürfe. It's a Swiss, magazine for literature. And I think it's almost 20 years since they published. And looking back, it's really amazing that... Looking back, I realized that they influenced me more than I thought.
Oh, that's...
And I was standing in front of my bookshelf and picked it up and said, oh, wow, somehow that reminds me of something. And it really has the same format as Reportagen almost. It has a very similar typo. And looking back, really, I think this is one of the projects...
It somehow seeped into your consciousness.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I still think that even almost, 10 years ago, 10 years after, I still think it's really, really nicely made. Mm.
Even though you're charging 1 franc more.
Yes. And but that's 10 years ago.
Okay, final words for you, Urs.
I brought a Neves sign. Neves is an independent publishing house based in Zurich. They're focusing on publishing artists' books and signs. It's actually the work of mostly one man called Benjamin Sommerhalder. They do 3 of these signs within a month. And each issue focuses on one artist, and they basically do it on a black and white photocopier. It's really something that, to all commercial rules, it can't work out, but it does. They're quite successful. I heard that their new signs are sold out within hours on the internet.
You got there just in time, because this one is issue 97 of 100, which is also very, very delicately written across the back. Gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there. That brings us to the end of this 30th edition of The Stack. My guests today were Claude Fankhauser of Reportagen and also Urs Honegger, head of online editorial at Hochparterre. My producer sitting beside me is Don Trump, and Adrian Craddock, back in London, sadly didn't make the trip. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. And remember, you can catch up with us next week. I am on holiday, however, but you'll be in the very capable hands of Tom Edwards. Of course, you can listen again via monocle.com or iTunes. But for now, for me, Tyler Brulé in Zurich, it's goodbye and have a good weekend.